It's time for the Faith Connection Show with your host, Dr. David Miller, equipping people to connect with their purpose. In the next half hour, you will be inspired with words of encouragement, and you'll be motivated by experts in the respective field who have been where you're trying to go on the Faith Connection Show. But first, here's an inspirational word from Dr. David Miller.
Our word of the day is a quote from Norman Vincent Peale. Change your thoughts and you change your world. Just before the show today, we're going to hear a great tune by Dominique Ricks entitled, I Can't Afford.
If you faint not, you can't afford.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Connection Show. And here's Dr. Miller with his special guest.
We have on the show with us today Sharon Edwards, founder and CEO of Community Outreach Training Center, Incorporated. And Sharon is down in Thomasville, Georgia, and she has a fantastic program. And Sharon, it's just great having you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Now, Sharon, just before we get started with the interview, I want our listeners to hear a little bit about you, because first of all, when I read your resume, I said to myself, I'm not interviewing Sharon, I'm interviewing Superwoman. So I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to let our listeners hear a little bit about how you got here and why, and your journey to this place in life. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I live in Southwest Georgia. I live in Thomasville, Georgia. It's a very small rural community, about 4 miles, 4 hours south of Atlanta, about 25 minutes north of Tallahassee. Grew up here in public housing. I also lived between Thomasville and St. Petersburg, Florida, as well as I lived in Atlanta and lived in Houston. And one of the things living in public housing, I realized that I lived in public housing, but I don't have the public housing mentality or the mindset. And so it was always just important for me to learn so that I could better my life situation. And so doing, I adopted the saying that is my life's motto, and it's what I don't know, I learn. What I learn, I master, and what I master, I teach to others. I always say that I'm a student of the universe, so I'm a lifelong learner, but also I consider myself a training program administrator, that I just believe in every area of my life that I should be teaching or training or facilitating or helping someone else to learn by eliminating literacy and providing opportunities based on the gifts that we have within each of us.
Thank you very much. And we're going to now start by talking about being a certified housing counselor.
Okay. So certified housing counselor, this is mandated by United States Department of Housing and Urban Development. So when we had the housing crash back in 2008, there was a lot of subprime lenders, and a lot of people lost their housing, as you're well aware of. And so we had a housing market crash. And so one of the things that they really emphasized was with some of the big three, and the big three are Citi Mortgage, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo, where they made a lot of subprime loans and people lost their houses. They had a lot of adjustable mortgages. And what they wanted to do, they wanted to really emphasize is getting education to the communities of low to moderate income families that were the ones that really lost a lot of their houses, that a lot of houses went into foreclosure. And so even here in South Georgia, we were affected, maybe not as bad as some of the other communities, because right now our housing home rate of those that have mortgages is at about 64.4%. So there's sort of still a huge kind of divide. The wealth gap is still a larger gap. And so our housing administrator with the city of Thomasville at the time knew she was going to be retiring and wanted someone to come in to continue to offer these services to our low to moderate income families. So I began to start taking classes with NeighborWorks, which is one of the training institutes that provides, that creates the curriculum for the housing counselors. So I probably have taken around right at about 23 certifications to be certified as a housing counselor. Everything from credit counseling, money management, budgeting, all of those are required for us to work with low to moderate income families to prepare them for home ownership.
Now, is it recommended that most nonprofits would have someone on staff that is certified in this area? Because there are a lot of nonprofits out here that are sort of trying to do work in the community, and their housing is one area that seems like every community is weeping for. And so should that be one of the primary positions held by at least someone on the staff with a nonprofit organization that's doing community development?
If their mission, Dr. Miller, is housing, affordable housing, which is there's a lack of, as I said, around the country, if their mission is working with housing, then certainly it would be advantageous to have someone on their staff that is a certified housing counselor. And most of the counseling agencies are nonprofit agencies. So I know you have some there in Baltimore, and they're having every state basically should have at least 2 to 3 nonprofit or more nonprofit organizations that really concentrate and specialize in housing. And for us, housing deals with the homeless, it deals with the rental, it deals with those that are also interested in purchasing a home. And okay. So the more information that they have, then the more beneficial it is to their community.
Now, you know, being a certified loan packager for USDA, now, a lot of times people have credit issues that prevent them from getting a mortgage from USDA or in, because now USDA, what is the residential requirement for the credit score to get a loan? Okay.
So for USDA, the first thing is you want to have a credit score of at least 640. Mm-hmm. That's a minimum. Oftentimes, they will offer do a waiver if it's right under the 640. No late pays in the last 12 to 24 months. Also, they want to make sure their debt-to-income ratio is not over 41%. So usually, we look at someone, we look at how they're paying their bills and all of those type of things and see what is on their credit report and make sure that they don't have any new collections in the last 24 months. Then usually they can kind of work with them. And then there's an income requirement too, because they look at those that are extra low income. That's a 30% AMI for that community. And then the maximum is 80% AMI. That's just for the USDA direct loan. Now they also have USDA guaranteed loan program, which means they can make a little bit more. They can make over the 80% area medium income. They still, I think the max is $78,000 or $79,000 that would make them cause them to be eligible for the guarantee. The guarantee means they go to a bank and then USDA guarantees the loan through the bank. So they still have to be at that 640 credit score.
Okay. Now, what is the maximum lending amount?
Now, it's different on different communities. Now, for our area, the maximum loan amount is $251,862. That's just for Thomas County. And those numbers recently increased. Now, for your area, for Baltimore, we would have to go back, and they have all of that out on the website, on USDA website. But each county is different, and each state is different because okay. It is for the rural areas.
Okay.
But for where we are, it's $251,862 is the loan limit.
We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with Sharon and hear more about the fantastic programs that Sharon and her company is involved in. But meanwhile, we're going to hear from Pastor Charles Moore and the Faithful Few and this fantastic song that he's got out that's called Divine Direction.
Trying to make it. know I can be strong. Now you get so tired of the hurt and pain that accompanies the way you're living. And you know there's gonna be a better way. Gotta find out what in life you're missing.
Sharon Edwards.
Now, when you do as a training facilitator, do you actually do this kind of training in the community that teaches them how to get a loan? And what do you do in your training and curriculum development area?
Absolutely. I find it's very important. The first thing we do, we offer the home buy education classes, and this is a 6 to 8 hour workshop where we sit down and we talk with them on everything of what it takes to become eligible as a homeowner. And we partner with other agencies as well. But usually the first step, if we can get them into the client, into this classroom, then basically it's a mindset change. Because they understand the importance of credit, the importance of budgeting, the importance of money management, understanding what debt to income ratio is. Then we sit down and we talk with them. We give them some skills that they need to actually start the journey. And once they begin the journey, then we schedule an appointment and we meet with them one-on-one. So we work with the client up to 2 years for them to become eligible to own a home.
So does that mean that while they may be in subsidized housing right now and they want to get into home ownership, you'll work with them while they're living in subsidized housing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the key. And many of the clients that we're getting approved now, I think we have about 6 that are getting ready, that are going through the approval process now. And many of them live in subsidized housing or income-based housing. And when we show them, especially through USDA, not only can you become approved to buy or build a home, but also they have a subsidy that will help them pay their mortgage up to $250. So for someone that may be paying $600 or $700 in income-based housing, they can get a brand new 3-bedroom, 2-bath house and probably pay about $680 for a mortgage, but then get $200 toward their assistance. Toward that mortgage. So they're paying around $450 for a mortgage. And then also with USDA, they get 33 years versus 30 years.
Okay. Now, how long would they get the subsidy?
Well, what they do is USDA, every 2 years, they will look at their income and see if their income has changed. If the income has increased, then it will affect their mortgage. At any time, especially after 5 to 7 years, at any time they decide they want to change the house, sell the house, or they want to purchase a larger house, a newer house, then they will go back and they will look at, USDA will look at what has been paid out on the subsidy, and they will get that back first before they're actually able to sell the house.
Fantastic.
So, but every 2 years, they will review and see where they are, if their income has increased. And we've helped those that even on fixed income, we've helped elderly couples purchase their very first home. So we have a 70-year-old couple, and they purchased their first home, and they're paying about $400 a month for a brand new 3-bedroom, 2-bath house.
So in other words, the program is not age sensitive. I mean,
Absolutely. That's, you cannot discriminate based on age. That's one of those fair housing no-nos. So you can't discriminate because of age, race, gender, any of those things. There's 7 classes, and that's one of the classes that you cannot. So we have quite a few that are elderly that have actually been approved for home ownership.
Fantastic. Look, now, what about the curriculum development? How does that work?
Okay. Well, with our curriculum development, we look at what is needed. If a nonprofit organization is interested in offering a particular service, we look at who the audience is, what that service is, what is it that they're providing, and how they want to present this information. And so we do a full assessment of what they want to offer. And then once we understand and identify what those services are, then we can go and basically create a curriculum for that. And usually the curriculum development, what we've done in the past, has been employment, professional development, and then also entrepreneurship. We've created and developed several curriculums to help with that. And we actually now have a program called Clark Thomasville based on some of the curriculums that have already been tried and true, that have been developed and very successful.
Okay. Now, we talked earlier about the training facilities and being a training facilitator and the programs and services that you would be training people in that area. Now, is there a cost to people to come to this? I mean, or is it free?
There is a cost, and usually the cost is a sliding fee scale based on that. So say, for instance, for our entrepreneur program, someone comes in, it's a 12-week cohort, and we're actually doing our second cohort that actually starts tonight. So for someone that is interested in that, it's $125, and that's all the only cost associated. They just have to sign an agreement. They're going to be committed to the process, and they're going to come every Tuesday night for 3.5 hours for 12 weeks. So it depends on basically what it is, what curriculum we're offering. When we offered the professional development, it was just the application fee, and we partner with other agencies and other local we call them community champions, mm-hmm. that will actually undergird the cost so that it wouldn't be a cost to those that are participating.
Oh, okay.
So we try to create partnerships within our community to encourage those that really want to basically create sustainable income, either for their business or for themselves, or learn a new skill. One of the things we call them the underestimated community. We don't call them low wealth. We call them underestimated, because I believe that the skills that each individual have has just been underestimated, if not by those in the community, by themselves.
Okay. So, you know, it's been really educational to have you on the show, and it's fantastic, the things that you're doing there. And the reason I wanted you on is because there are people who listen to our show that have nonprofit businesses, and certainly I think what you've told us today has been really enlightening, and there are a lot of people who need the services of USDA, and we would love to have more time to talk with you. And of course, I told you we're going to do some things that we hope that we'll be able to involve your company in. And it's just been great, Sharon, having you on the program. I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and tap this wealth of knowledge that you have.
Well, thank you. And it's been a pleasure being a part of the show. And I look to be in your area very soon. And we can perhaps put together a workshop or something like that, because I believe in getting this information out to our community. I can be reached on LinkedIn, www.linkedin.com/Ian/Sharon D. Edwards. I'm also on Facebook, Sharon D. Edwards. My email is Sharon.Edwards@owningthedream.com. Sharon D. Edwards at owningthedream.com. And my website, of course, for Community Outreach Training Center is www.owningthedream.com. And then also, I can be reached by phone. We do consultations. I have it's 229-289-0032. And we do quite a few workshops. And if you're interested in our entrepreneur program, sparkthomasville.com. Spark, S-P-A-R-K, Thomasville, T-H-O-M-A-S-V-I-L-L-E.com. And you will see our first cohort and those that have graduated and gone on to actually start their businesses and that are working on economic viability within our community.
Fantastic. Well, Sharon, like I said, it's been fantastic having you on the show, and you brought a great deal of knowledge to the show, and I thank you very much and look forward to talking to you again in the very near future.
Thank you so very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
All right. You have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
The world premiere of the brand new single, I Can Love You Through Anything, by musician, singer, songwriter, and producer, Ken Hardio.
I can love you.
Featuring Charlotte, North Carolina's very own musician, singer, songwriter, music educator, and producer, Quentin Bethay. This song has a message of hope and healing for people of all ages across the globe. Get your copy now. Available on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Google Play.
This is Dr. David Miller. I want to thank you for tuning in to our show today, The Faith Connection. Join us next week as we interview Carl David, who is a suicide advocate, who is going to talk to us about his new book, How My Family Survived Suicide. Join us next week. Don't forget, tune in.
Thank you for listening to The Faith Connection Show with Dr. David Miller, making a connection for you and equipping people to connect with their purpose. Don't forget to log on to theconnectcenternc.com. That's connectcenternc.com. If you'd like to reach Dr. David Miller, email theconnectcenter3@gmail.com. That's theconnectcenter3@gmail.com. And remember, never lose the connection to your purpose. It's time for the Faith Connection Show with your host, Dr. David Miller, equipping people to connect with their purpose. In the next half hour, you will be inspired with words of encouragement, and you'll be motivated by experts in the respective field who have been where you're trying to go on the Faith Connection Show. But first, here's an inspirational word from Dr. David Miller.
The word of the day is, no one is useless in this world who lightens the burdens of others. Charles Dickens. Okay, we're going to start our show today with the current hit by Todd Delaney, Doing It All Again.
We got a brand new one I'm going to share with you tonight. Are you ready? Goes like this.
You make the blind man see. Make the lame man walk again. You cause the dead to rise. And that's why we dance in liberty. Cause you're doing it all again. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're doing it all again. Doing it again! Oh, 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 oh
the same God. Yeah, you're still healing. He's the same God. Come on, say still create.
Still create.
He's the same God. Same God.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Connection Show. And here's Dr. Miller with his special guest.
We have in the studio with us today, Carl David. And Carl is has an unusual profession. He's a fine arts dealer and author and all of those other things. We're going to talk to Carl about a lot of different things today, but mainly we're going to be talking to him about suicide, because Carl is an advocate for suicide prevention. I'm just going to call you Carl rather than Carl David, okay? Okay, Carl. It's great having you on the show today, Carl.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show, and I will follow your lead and answer any questions you have. Nothing's off limits.
Oh, okay. We appreciate that. Listen, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, because, God, when I read your resume, there's a lot there, even though we're not going to be discussing all of that. But I sure want them to make the connection with who you are and how you got to this point in life.
Okay. I am, as you had mentioned, a third generation art dealer in Philadelphia in our gallery, the David David Gallery, which is now in its fourth generation with our sons. I grew up in the business. I went to college. Well, I went to Temple University and got thrown out after 2 years. it's a story for a different day. and I got reinstated, and I went to Oglethorpe College in Atlanta to get my last and best 2 years of school. And, you know, part of the reason I had gotten thrown out of college is I had experienced the suicide of one of my brothers when I was 16. He was 22. And it really ruined my life to a point that I just had no focus, and I was going downhill. But these tragedies make you stronger if you can survive them. And they kind of incorporate into your psyche so that they become part of who you are. And so now I'm an art dealer, and I've written 4 books, and I use this current book, Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide, to reach out to people to raise awareness to the issue of suicide, which is such a prevalent beast, if you will, in our society. So that's who I am. I'm a big supporter of law enforcement, our military, and just on my path of paying it forward in life. That's who I really am.
Well, David, you know, there's a saying that says if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. And, of course, some of the things that have gone on in your life certainly have made you stronger, and you've gone on to make a great contribution in life. We're going to be talking about suicide and the things that you perhaps discuss with people who you come in contact with. Let's look at some of the statistics. First of all, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the U.S. for all ages. And the other thing I found out is that every day approximately 123 Americans die by suicide. And there's one death every 12 minutes from suicide in the U.S. Depression affects about 20 to 25% of Americans ages 18 plus. And last year, suicide, there were 44,965 Americans that committed suicide last year. And the highest rate in the U.S. is among whites, American Indians, and Alaskan Natives. And so when I began to look into the suicide thing, I was looking for somebody to bring on the show to discuss this with. And David, I thought you would be a great person because of your passion for this, because you lost your brother. You were 16 and he was 22. And usually younger brothers kind of look up to older brothers. Tell us a little bit about that situation.
Well, there were three of us all together, and Bruce was the middle brother, and he was my idol. He was 6 years older than I was, but he was just the typical the guy driving the cool car and the Marlboros stuck up his, rolled up his shirt sleeve, and, you know, girls flocking around him, and he had it. Well, we thought he had it all. But apparently he didn't, and whatever demons he had inside him, he just kept there because this came as a complete blindside. We had no idea whatsoever. We saw nothing coming. There was no note. There was no indication. You know, when you have these typical signs of a suicide, and there are some which we can get into later, but we didn't see any of those, nothing. And, you know, we were really, really close, one, as a family, but two, Bruce and I were extremely close. We were like best friends, and there are times that he came to my rescue, and, you know, I was unfortunately never able to step in and intervene and see this coming. But it really fractures the dynamic of a family, and it's the kind of thing that can either pull it apart completely or make you closer to fill that gap, which is the way we went. It certainly was not easy. You know, it's just that this is not something that you ever anticipate, and you hope that nobody does, but it was a world that we were thrust into instantly and had no clue how to deal with it.
You know, as an advocate for prevention of suicide, tell us, I know your brother's situation definitely would have been enough to make you decide to become an advocate to prevent suicide, but was this part of the healing process for you?
It was a bit cathartic, yes. In the beginning, I didn't know I'd be doing this. I was just trying to climb out of the darkness that I had fallen into, and quite honestly, this is something that's too big for any one person to handle. It's the kind of thing where you really need to get outside help. And I did. I had the benefit of 4 years of psychoanalysis, which basically saved my life. And it gave me the coping mechanisms and tools beyond which those I had from my family to realize, one, you get past the guilt, and you get past the anger, and then you have to do something with it. So I knew when I wrote this book, I had originally written it to memorialize my family, and realized also partway through it that there was something much bigger that it would be. And that was a way of my paying forward and reaching out and becoming an advocate to prevent suicide and to help people who have gone through it as well to cope, because you just kind of don't know if you're ever going to get through it and survive it. And we all need to know that we can, with the proper help, we can get through this. Let me say this, you never get over it. You only learn to live with it as best you can. And this is a scar that it becomes imprinted in your very soul and your very existence. So you can't run from it. I tried doing that for years, and it would back up and smack me in the face with physical symptoms. You know, when you pretend it doesn't exist and it's not there, suddenly you're getting migraines, you're getting stomach distress, you just don't feel right until you let the feelings out, because the emotional body runs the physical body. There is no question about that. And you can't have one without the other.
Carl, we're going to take a quick break here while we hear from one of my favorite gospel artists, Yolanda Adams. I'm gonna be ready.
Prepare my mind, prepare my heart.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Connection Show. And here's Dr. Miller with his special guest.
You know, right now, across America, every time you hear about suicide, and the first thing that comes up is mental illness. But in this case, there was no signs of even that. And I'm not so sure. There are so many different stressors that people go through. And a lot of times what one of us would not blink an eye at becomes a major stressor in the life of another person. So as an advocate, do you believe that these stressors are a contributory factor to suicide?
Oh, absolutely. And you never know what's going to trigger someone and their emotional distress. I mean, it could be something very simple. You know, I always say when you're walking down the street, give somebody a smile, you know, and because that one gesture might make them feel better about themselves or think that's and understand that someone cares about them when they're going through something that you can't see or they won't let you see. So I do believe firmly the life stressors today come in so many different forms and to such degrees. And you just never know how one thing will set somebody off where it won't bother somebody else.
You know, and that's the truth. And of course, there was one thing that I thought about in the book, how it revealed the struggle of the entire family and the torment that went through your family after the suicide. And I think that's something that is important to discuss because every individual processes tragedy differently. And it's, you know, it seems that in your book, you sort of hint to that, that the struggle was not just with you, but it rippled through your entire family.
It did. And, you know, Alan, my eldest brother, and I were very careful in how we kind of dealt with this with our parents, almost as if we were the parents and they were the children, because we knew the impact of what they were going through based on what we were going through. So we were all walking kind of on eggshells, talking a little bit about it, but not delving into it to the point that it was going to take us over and not let us try and get through it. So we were all very concerned for one another and did the best we could to, you know, accommodate each other's feelings and, you know, just try to deal with it as best we could. It was a sensitive subject, and we didn't want to upset them, and they didn't want to upset us.
Correct. Now, do you think that going through this heightened sensitivity within the family for each other? Because I know when one person is lost in a family, especially when it's not by an accident or some other tragedy, but it's basically by self-inflicted methods. Did you find out it pulled the family closer together?
It definitely drew us closer together. You know, we had two options, and that would have been to isolate one another, just going into our own corners, or working together as a family and kind of trying to fill the gap, which is exactly what we did. Now, my dad only lived 8 years after Bruce took his life and died at way too young age of 58. But, it, you know, he internalized it. He didn't talk about it all that much. And I think he sincerely felt responsible, even though he couldn't have seen it coming. And he was the one who found him. Mm-hmm. And my mom, counter to that, lived to be 94, and she had given up the will to live. And we told her, hey, we need you. This is a time when we really need you both. And we kept harping on that. And after my dad died, Alan and I reiterated that, how much we need her, you know, and she had no purpose in life anymore. And we said, hey, you know, you've got us and we need you. So, you know, we really need to pull together on this and survive it. It's like losing troops in a battle. You got to keep going until you win the battle.
And that's absolutely true. You know, it had to have affected your father probably more profoundly than everybody because he found him. And I don't know by what means your brother took his life, but that had to have been traumatic for your father to walk in and find that your brother had taken his life.
Yeah, it was extremely traumatic. And I could see the anguish and the pain and just the total trauma that caused. I mean, I can't even fathom anything like that. You know, we've got two kids who are now 43 and 38, and that's our worst nightmare, that something like that would ever happen. And we, you know, we took a long time before our kids were old enough to let them know what happened with my brother. We wanted them to hear it from us, not from somebody else, from a stranger, and say, oh, what happened? I didn't know that, you know. But it was only until they were like in their early, 13, 14 years old that we felt they could handle it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they both assured us that would never happen.
Well, let me ask you this, David. I know we got to wrap this up. I could just talk to you all day because, you know, this is really healing in a lot of ways for a lot of different people. And we hope our listeners are gleaning healing from this. But however, what should, as an advocate, what should you do if you suspect that someone is considering taking their lives?
You're better to be overzealous and either talk to them. If you can't talk to them, talk to their family. Call 911. Worst case scenario, the worst you'll do is embarrass somebody, but you might just save their life. You need to reach out. You need to be aware, and you need to be vigilant, and you need to be proactive rather than saying, oh, I wish I had done something. I should have seen that. I should have said something. You know, after the fact, it's too late. And it may be something where you can just talk to somebody and listen to them. You know, if you can talk somebody off the ledge for 10 minutes, that's usually enough time to get them to at least listen and maybe go for help.
I want you to give your contact information. And certainly, I've just read some of the excerpts from this, from your book. And I think every family that has gone through the suicide situation in their family, and the family is trying to make sense of it and survive through it, I think your book will be a great place for them to begin. So why don't you tell our listening audience how to get your book and how to contact you, and perhaps they may be looking for someone to speak on this in a open setting.
Sure, I'd be happy to. First of all, my name is Carl David. It's C-A-R-L. Last name is David, D-A-V-I-D. My website's under reconstruction, but I can always be reached at carledavid@gmail.com. That's carledavid@gmail.com. The gallery number is 215-735-2922. That'll forward to me wherever I am. If anybody's in crisis, needs help, needs some information, has a question, or just wants to talk, I am always available and happy to help. The book is available in Amazon. It's in the Apple iBooks store. It's in about 60 different digital markets worldwide. If you just do a search for Bader Field by Carl David, it'll come up. And you can download it for, I don't know, whether it's $6 or $3. And the soft copy is still available. And, you know, I've given a lot of talks. I've done hundreds of radio shows and television and journal interviews, and I'm happy to do it. I don't charge. This is what somebody said to me the other day, why don't you? I said, I can't. It's not why I did this. I'm not in this for monetary benefit. I'm on a path of helping other people.
Well, David, it's been great having you on the show, and we're going to have to do some other talk. It's just interesting to me, and maybe we might be able to bring you back on a panel of other people who are advocates for this, because I think it needs to be addressed, because there are so many people out here hurting and suffering, and they need somebody who has trod that path before them.
Well, so, I'd be pleased to come back anytime if you need me.
Okay. Thank you very much, and you have a blessed day.
Thanks. You as well. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Okay.
It's an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The world premiere of the brand new single, I Can Love You Through Anything, by musician, singer, songwriter, and producer, Ken Hardio.
I can love you.
Featuring Charlotte, North Carolina's very own musician, singer, songwriter, music educator, and producer, Quentin Buffay. This song has a message of hope and healing for people of all ages across the globe. Get your copy now. Available on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, and Google Play.
This is Dr. David Miller. I want to thank you for tuning in to our show today, The Faith Connection. Join us next week. Don't forget, tune in.
Thank you for listening to the Faith Connection Show with Dr. David Miller, making a connection for you and equipping people to connect with their purpose. Don't forget to log on to the ConnectCenterNC.com. That's ConnectCenterNC.com. If you'd like to reach Dr. David Miller, email theconnectcenter3@gmail.com. That's theconnectcenter3@gmail.com. And remember, never lose the connection to your purpose.